It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
Right away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here. Sean Sullivan along with Mike Ward. Hello.
Good morning. Good morning.
Who brings in spurs and beard for me to see?
Well, I wanted to see yours.
Yeah, well, that's maybe by next week's show. Well, next week's show may possibly is how that goes down, but we'll talk about that. We'll talk some fishing as well on today's show.
Yeah,
got snapper stuff to talk about. Of course, I had on Midday Mobile yesterday. Had Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, on a little bit to talk about that Great American Snapper Count. And I don't want to – no, I do. I do want to plant the flag here. As all other media groups this week acted like this Great American Snapper Count was this breaking news, I did point out that not only on the Midday Show, but on this show, we've talked about that several times already.
That's right.
So you keep up with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. We'll keep you ahead of all the other news sources on the Great American Snapper Count, or whatever else is going on.
Yeah, finally, after about 20 years, the government has finally caught up to what me and you've always said, Sean, is that there has been 5-10 times more snapper than they say there is.
But they're saying three times,
and that's a conservative. They still haven't caught up with us yet.
Right, and they never will.
No.
I tell you what's good about that Great American Snapper Count. When I say good, because, number one, you and I have talked about this before, we can say how many snapper are out there, but that's us just saying it compared to somebody's saying they're doing a scientific survey.
That's right.
So you got to fight this apples to apples. Just saying, you know, what we think. So the other part of it is it is not state agencies and it's not the federal government that put it out. The funding came through the feds, but it was a completely independent research group that was not aligned with the state, Gulf states, and was not aligned with the feds, National Marine Fisheries. So now this whole, oh, well, they're doing, it's independent.
Right.
And you may say, well, why do we got? Well, that's the politics of this. And I hate it, but there's politics in this snapper game. And if you want to make a solid argument here, you have what they did. You have an independent group come back whose job is not dependent on either side. None of the people that did the research owe their job to a state or a federal agency.
Right.
So they could give you the straight dope on
deal.
It. Straight
yeah.
dope on it.
Yeah.
And I did, in some conversations I've had off the record, but that survey showing three times the amount of snapper previously is conservative, and that the idea was to come at this conservatively so there's even a more built-in buffer. These people who did the research, they themselves admit this is a conservative. So it may be at the ratio you're talking about, but they said
5-10 times more than they say.
But what they're doing is making sure that their data is so solid that nobody can argue with on the opposite,
right?
To say it's a, you
right.
know,
and so I can understand that. I mean, they don't want to get sued right. or have right. trouble, or people say, "Well, you lied," or
right.
They can prove what they said.
Yeah. So this group, these are marine biologists and scientists that did this independent of states, independent of the federal government. They did the sampling, you know, and went out there, and they were tasked. They were not given a mission to answer it this way or another way. They were told their mission statement, I'm oversimplifying it, is go tell us exactly what's going on out there.
Yeah.
And so that's the part of this, and if you want to go back and you can listen to yesterday's Midday Mobile in the noon hour, also podcast, we do, you know, this show gets podcast, we do 54 hours a week of podcasting around here, but you can go back and listen to that interview with Scott Bannon. He'll join us here in the next couple of weeks, but he explains what I was trying to say on the air is this is great information, but everybody thinks, all right, now they're going to set the season. Not so fast.
No.
It has to go to the meeting next month.
Charter.
Yeah.
They've set the charter.
I'll explain that in a second because I got a text about that on Friday too.
Okay.
So it now goes to Gulf Council. It actually goes to the SSC, the Scientific and Statistical Committee, and they basically vouch. They're like a vouch on the science that was used to obtain the numbers. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is the, okay, well, that's a formula. That's a form, you know. Not saying what they found, but that the methodology they used is, okay.
Works.
Then, yes. So then that gets signed up. Then it's given to the Gulf Council. I think it's like April 12th and 13th, or April 12th through 15th, they meet. At that point then the feds will come back with it and then offer, once again, remember this, y'all, even though we have state management of Red Snapper, the feds still set the tonnage.
That's right.
I'll say this, that conversations I've had so far, Director Bannon says it too, what they're fighting for this year, because they're realistic, y'all, to retain the number of days we had last year, the tonnage that we had last year.
The tonnage, not the days, tonnage.
Well, but that ends up being allocated by a certain number of days.
Right.
But to fight for that. Because, and you'd say, well, why is it not three times? Well, y'all, I'd love it to be that thing too. It's not going to happen in this first session.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. We were on track in Alabama, in conversations I had back in October, November, and December with the folks before the, they knew all the details. I guess the beginning of November, they released that report. So maybe October. Conversations I had with folks in the know said Alabama was getting ready to get big reduction in number of days.
I remember that.
And it's a little bit, I don't know if we'll drill into details when we have Director Bannon on in the future, but it's about what they call the currency or how they do the surveys. Even though they signed off on things like snapper check for us, scales and tails out of Mississippi, these different things, the feds all of a sudden decided, no, that the old phone survey was the real way to do it. And Florida did not institute a snapper check or scales and tails, and they just didn't do anything. They stuck with the old phone survey, which is inaccurate.
Very inaccurate.
On so many reasons.
Compared to what we're doing. Alabama and Mississippi does.
But the feds decided they'd like that better. So they then were going to punish Mississippi and Alabama and give, well, they said they were going to raise Florida's allotment. I say they were taking away from us and giving it to them. You call it whatever you want. Florida would get more allotment and Alabama and Mississippi would be reduced by a significant amount. We were looking at the possibility of having just a few days, snapper season. Now, Great American Snapper Count comes out. That goes into the formula, what they're going to use that for, even though National Marine Fisheries are going to say they're going to drag their feet and not want to do anything here. They're going to try to make the fair argument and say, listen, we got this data right here. You sure as heck aren't going to take us backwards from where we were last year.
Right.
So that's kind of the push that I expect to see in the April meeting.
Yeah.
And then season dates after that meeting, then the state gets it in their hands. State can't set anything until the feds decide what the allotment is, what the tonnage is.
Right.
Then Director Bannon's saying, looking at maybe beginning of May for the state to have told us, okay. He said most likely we're starting June 1st, and either Memorial Day weekend or June 1st as normal, and then he'll be able to tell everybody. But so it's going to be next month before. Just so many stories went out this week where people are like, oh, yeah, they're going to, next week tell us we have three times. Stop.
No. Nope.
Stop. Because that's not true.
No.
It's on social media. It's
at least middle of April before they're going to do anything.
Correct. Yeah. So that's the situation. We got good news, and we just got some, this is how the cookie crumbles, kind of, basic working through National Marine Fisheries. But
that's what we've always said, too, Sean, that, everybody was saying, well, I don't want to report because if we report mm-hmm. and do that, they're going to end up taking more away from us.
Yeah.
And they said, no, that ain't going to happen. We just need good data.
Right. And they were told, here's the thing, I want to make sure. Told,
that's right. It's not them.
They were told that if you do it this way, we'll let you stay. The Fed said, you want it, because if y'all new to this, feds just control all of it. That's how we got those 4-day seasons and the 7-day, They said, let us allocate the days because we can take into account the fact that it was a tropical storm. If y'all don't follow this or don't remember, it used to be the feds assumed the same number of people fished at the same rate every day snapper season was open.
Right.
So they would shut it down, even though half the days were 6-foot seas and nobody went.
That's right.
So the state can say, okay, using this. And so they said, hey, we want to control the days. And the Fed said, okay, well, how are you going to do this? So Alabama and Mississippi and others came up with a system to be able to say, here's how we will prove we're not overfishing. Fed said, okay, you got it. We did that for a while. We did the thing. They were doing it. The state of Alabama, I can't speak for Mississippi, but I'm sure it's the same. We're doing it to give us maximized number of days.
That's
feds
right.
Then turn around and say, yeah, we don't like that. And they use a term called currency, and maybe when the director's in, he can explain it better. But basically, we don't like how y'all do it. We want it to be the way it used to be with the phone, so we're going to penalize you for it.
Isn't that just nuts? But that's dealing with the government. What can you do about it?
Well, what has been done here, at least, is a not just us unhappy about it, but this scientific document that they can't say is not a scientific document.
Yeah.
So when they come out with their assessment, right, now there's another peer-qualified scientific document and say, nah, that's wrong.
So the government's coming out with their
The National Marine Fisheries forever has done their surveys on mud bottom, right,
and
said we don't have the fish we say we have.
Yeah, or sand bottoms.
Yes, yeah. And now you have another document that's done in the same language, right, as they do the federal one, that says that's wrong.
Yeah.
And so now, instead of it just being a – there's a speed bump between that bulldozer and the fisherman.
Yeah.
And that's the Great American Snapper Survey. So going forward, I think we have some chance to make some changes going forward. Hopefully, in the short term, we at least retain the tonnage from last year and fish it, you know, going forward. And of course, last year, we had the whole situation with getting to the tonnage more quickly because all y'all decided to snapper fish.
Everybody bought a boat.
Nobody could go to the travel baseball or go on the fancy trips they go on or whatever, so they stayed at home with Mike and I and snapper fish.
That's right.
And we went through the tonnage.
We can prove it. We got video of the people out there.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's what happened last year.
Yeah.
That's what people got. You got to stop for a second and think. It is, whether we like it or not, the way this is done is we're allocated, I think, 26% of the total tonnage in the Gulf. That's X number of pounds. They then go, okay, average fish size is it's 5 pounds, 6 pounds, depends on the year. This many people are going to go. So in this many days that they go, they'll achieve it. Well, they didn't factor in the fact that there'd be another couple thousand of y'all decide to go snapper fishing with us, and that's how we got it. So will that be the situation this year? I don't know. Coming right back, more of this discussion, plus some turkey talk, because Mike's got stuff to show off here in studio. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along. Remember, check us out, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Check it out there. Speaking of checking out, it looks good. Seeing a pretty good set of hooks and a beard laying here in the studio.
Yeah.
You know, we're probably one of the very few radio studios in America where antlers and turkey spurs and beards get laid out, right?
Probably
one of the very few.
We got the display,
which I love. Let's talk about it. So, and by the way, on the snapper thing, we will revisit this in weeks to come, and you know, do it in detail as we do, and have Director Bannon on. We'll walk through this. So, any specific questions too for the director? You can always email me, Sean@fmtalk1065.com. That's SEAN, and we can get those assembled and asked to the director. All right, yeah. Switching gears to the turkey woods here, and so let's talk about it.
Well, of course, you know, it opened up Saturday.
Yeah.
And I heard one, I didn't hear but one turkey gobble Saturday morning. So I went and set up on him, probably a couple hundred yards away from him. And he came up probably within 100 yards of me, but I'm sure he had hens.
Right.
And he just went away, and I never heard anything else. So, middle of the day, I went fishing and caught a whole pile of fish.
Now we're talking.
Yep. And then I went back in the afternoon trying to roost one, see if I could hear one fly up and gobble or something, but I didn't. So I go back Sunday morning, and Saturday was a hazy, overcast morning, and they don't really like to gobble on those days. Okay, I go back Sunday morning, exact same spot, probably hear five or six gobble. So I get on one, and our woods are just really open right now. They're 35-year-old pine plantations.
Right.
That you can see, been thin one time, but you can see 150, 200 yards in some places. So anyway, I'm set up, and I hear this turkey gobble, and he's coming. Well, he's got hens with him. And I ain't seen about 150 yards out there, and I hear him, and he gobbled another time or two, but he wasn't interested in me because he had the hens with him. And then they went on. And then I had one gobble behind me. And I said, well, I turned around.
Yeah, other side of the tree.
Yeah.
Move the other side.
I didn't go to the other side. I just twisted around.
Right.
And he was probably 150 yards from me. I said, well, he's coming, you know, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Well, sat there. Nothing happened. And he gobbled several more times. But then another one to my right gobbled about 200 yards. And I said, well, one of these are going to come. I mean, I'm turning around, right? So if either one of them come, I'll have an opportunity on them. Well, after about 30 minutes, I mean, they gobbled a few more times, and I could hear one of them, But I can hear
Mike can hear, and y'all are gonna say that if he's hearing, you know, if he hears spit and drum, he must be close. Mike can hear spit and drum in the next county.
So I don't know what it is about my
that
hearing.
Frequency is.
I don't know. I have no idea. There's certain things I can't hear at all.
Right.
But
you can hear that frequency.
I can hear a turkey. Now, that turkey I was telling you about, the first one that morning,
mm-hmm.
I'm looking at him. He's 150 yards out there. I know he's 150 yards out there. And I can hear him. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
You know? So, anyway, I'm sitting there, another 30 minutes or so, nothing happens, you know? So, I just kind of shut up for a little while, just quit yapping. Mm-hmm. And then the morning goes on, and I heard across the highway on other people's property, I heard a couple turkeys gobble over there, which they can come across, just dirt road. They can come across.
Yeah,
to
highway.
It's a dirt road.
Yeah,
it's not a highway.
It's Central Black Belt Highway. In other words,
dirt road.
It's a dirt road that doesn't have big ruts in it.
Yeah. So anyway, the morning goes by, and, you know, I'm sitting down at, and this is at the end, I'll tell you the story on it, but I sat down at 6:30 that morning on that turkey, and here it is.
It's about, barely light.
Yeah, barely light. And here it is. It's about 20 minutes to 11, and I'm looking at my watch. I said, well, about 11 o'clock or 11:30, I'm going to give it up.
You know, most people have been out there 2 hours ago. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Mike sticks with them. Yes.
Or they don't, you know, nothing happened. They get up and go somewhere else. But my woods are open.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do that. And my woods, I've got about 150 acres that I can hunt. That's not a clear cut.
Right.
You know, so I can't do a lot of moving around anyway. But about 20 minutes to 11, maybe a quarter to 11, I hear one gobble.
Just
barely. I said, was that a turkey gobble? And, you know, I didn't say anything. I hadn't yapped in about 15, 20, maybe 30 minutes. I don't know.
Right.
It's been a while. So I heard that one gobble, and I'm thinking, I think I heard that one gobble. And then I'm really listening hard at where I thought he came from, and I heard him again, cow, you know, and I said, that is a turkey. So anyway, I waited just a minute or two, and then I clucked, purred, and yelped, and he, cow. So he heard me.
Right.
You know, and people are,
They can hear. I'll tell you something from my weekend, yeah.
Yeah, they can hear unbelievably a turkey sound. I mean, most people.
We yelp. And I can talk about this later, why you might yelp hard or loud, but we don't have to for them to hear
you. You do not have to. I have learned to tone my yelping down.
There could be somebody, you can yelp, there'd be somebody 10 yards away from you. A person might not be able to hardly hear that yelp, and a turkey at 250 yards can hear it and gobble.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, this turkey, he's got to be 600 yards.
Dang.
Maybe further, Sean. I mean, he's way down there, you know. And anyway, so I yipped and clucked and purred, and he answered me. So I just shut up. And then next time I heard him, cow, you know.
Closer.
He's coming, you know. So I didn't say anything. And then another maybe 2 or 3 minutes goes by, and I yip and purr, cow. So I said, he's coming, you know, so. I shut up again, let him come on. He gobbled another time, too, he's coming. He got out about 150 yards from me, and I clucked and purred. And he, cow, you know, he's just right there.
He has closed the distance.
Yeah, so I just shut up. I said, he knows where I'm at now. I don't have to say another word. And sure enough, here he comes. Well, it's two of them. Two of them come up, and about 30 yards. And I could hear him coming, too. I could hear him drumming about 150 yards or so out there. I could hear him.
Then that thing where you catch just the top of the fan.
Yeah. I mean, what they were doing, they were walking, and they'd stop. And
strut.
And then they'd
That's agonizing sometimes. I love seeing it.
Yeah.
Because it's fantastic. But it's agonizing sometimes. when they you know they're coming, but they're going to stop. They're going to strut for however long. Then they're going to take like 2 steps. I'm like, come on. A little more than that.
But sometimes they get out there 7,500 yards.
And just strut.
They just expect the hen to come to them.
Yeah.
You know, they're not coming in any closer.
Right.
But he had competition. He had another one with him.
Yeah.
So I think that he said, well, I better beat him there.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that's what that was about, I think. But the moral to the story is, and you know what I'm going to say, and we've talked about it many, many times on this show.
Yes.
Patience kills turkeys.
More than calls. More than the newest shot, more than the newest whatever.
It don't matter. Patience will kill a turkey.
You're the most patient turkey hunter I've ever hunted with.
Now, there's been times, you know, I get set up on a turkey and, you know, within 20, 30 minutes, he's dead and, you know, it's all good.
Yeah.
But I have killed
what way, time was it again? 11?
It was right at 11 o'clock when I killed
that
turkey.
And you sat on that bird first 6:30?
6:30, yep. And 11 o'clock I killed one. But I can't tell you how many times that I have done that, and I'm looking at my watch, and I'm saying 10 more minutes, I'm getting ready to get out of here, or 15 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever. And, boy, just before I'm getting ready to get up, one gobbles or one sneaks in on me or whatever, and I've been there for 2 or 3 or 4 hours or more, you know? Patience will kill them.
And they often know. Yeah, we talked about this with our interview with Dr. Mike Chamberlain, the turkey doc, which, by the way, obviously y'all like the podcast numbers on that are insane, and y'all can go back and listen to that interview. Just go to our podcast tab on the website or go to iTunes or Stitcher and just search for FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors and Dr. Mike Chamberlain. But, you know, the kind of the discussion of how that gobbler conducts his day in a gobbling lek. He uses that term L-E-K, like sage grouse out in the prairies. But you know how you're always like, yeah, there's always a bird kind of gobbling there every year.
Right.
Right. They set up these areas where though at first, not saying there's not, listen, I got stories of birds pitching to you right away. They got that for my story coming up in a little bit. But a lot of times you hear that bird, he just stays over there and gobbles.
Yep.
And then later on in the morning, he comes to you. Well, the research shows that that is part of the, you know, I mean, we all know it's at hunters, but the research shows that that is a habit, that they go this spot where they can see or be seen.
Yep.
And they come down and gobble and strut.
Gobble and strut.
And the idea is
to come to them.
Yeah. And the thing that Chamberlain's research was interesting to me, because they have radio transmitters on these hens, that these girls will go over here to this gobbler, this dominant gobbler here, and go see him, maybe breed, not probably not, you know, just see them, and they'll hang around a while, and then when we always say they slip off, well, it's not always to go nest or something. He said they'll show up at another area where a bird's gobbling and go just look at him and see what's up and go. So what happens is then kind of as dominoes, as those hens have now moved on to the next one, well, then that gobbler, there's no more hens coming, and he breaks. Later in the day, another one could break. Another one could break because the hens have – they may be going to yet another gobbler, but they have left this one.
Yep. Yep.
And that's, you know, so later on the morning, that's kind of I know we all know it from hunting them, but it was interesting to, with radio callers, to say for sure what they're doing.
That's right.
And he's like, yeah, the radio caller stuff, they'll be like, yeah, there goes the hen. She's there. She's here. Then she's over here at this other gobbler, and, you know.
And that gobbler's sitting there, and he's strutting, and he's spinning around, and he's just admiring himself, I think. And then
after a while,
then he stops.
Where'd
she
go? Where'd they go?
Where in the world? And then he hears me yep over there, and then he says, oh, she went over there.
That's why we get those when they break mid-morning.
9 o'clock or so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 10 o'clock, whatever it is.
So
that's exactly right.
And so that patience, there's the science behind it. The reason to do it is what, you know, Mike's holding in his hand, spurs in the beard. So it works. Great hunt.
It was an awesome hunt. It sure was. But, you know, you go through a Saturday like I did and not hear but one turkey gobble, and, you know, you just kind of get disappointed. And then the next day, man, they just gobbling everywhere.
Yeah, just because you didn't hear them gobble doesn't mean they
that's exactly right
weren't there. All right, we're coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you here.
All right, you've heard my story.
Yeah,
your
success story.
I have not.
I'm here for comic relief, Mike.
Me and you have not talked.
We have not. There's been no.
I don't know what you did this weekend.
We don't. This is. We have not. We have not.
We came in, started this thing, and we haven't talked.
Other than you throwing the hardware down on the. You know, the table there.
Yeah, you walked right by it and didn't even see it.
Does that tell you how?
Goodness gracious!
How many things I got going on at this radio station?
Yeah.
So, but I didn't catch that. So yeah, it's you know, turkeys are doing a little bit of what we just talked about. At least on our place, there's a lot of goblins. Actually, Saturday morning had a lot of goblin, which I was one of the few, at least in the people I talked to.
Yeah.
Not a lot of goblin compared to others. I mean, it's been better at our place, but enough of them out there that they gobble pretty good. With hens.
Yeah.
You know, and I played the chess game and tried to get in front of the hens. And you know, always play that game. Do you try to sweet talk her and sound like a hen that she may be missing from her flock so she brings it, or do you try to get all over her and see if... I tried both. They both didn't work. but played a little chess game, checkers game with turkeys out there. Ended up having... I called a pile of Jakes up. I had one Jake about step on my boot at that point.
Well, that's a great sign. Yeah. And I've got, for the first year, I've got 13 Jakes on my place.
Good for you. I had 8 13. In this group that walked out. Eight.
So, I mean, I haven't seen that, Sean, and I can't tell you how long. I mean, usually I'll see one Jake a year, two
Jake. I love
Jake.
Seeing Jake, yes.
Yeah, that means that if they make it,
yes.
You know, in a year or two, they're going to be good.
And the stats are, you know, when they get to that point, we've talked about this in past shows, you know, what we worry about, like the reason to work on habitat and to do trapping and all these things is to try to get them up to where they can fly up and roost in a tree. Their
correct.
Survival rates go up considerably after that. And anything could happen to Jake. But once we're talking about adult turkeys, this is a critter that God made to live a while. Yeah. Turkeys live a while. You know, quail, I talk about quail management. Quail are like one and done. They're like a shrimp, right? They have big clutches because they live like 2 years, you know?
Dove.
Yeah, dove. Same thing. Yeah. Turkeys are meant to stay alive a long time.
Yeah.
And once they get past that danger point, unless Mike gets them, they do. So, yeah, that was Saturday. Saturday I played some tic-tac-toe, had things to do, family things to go do, had to leave them. Sunday, had the Jakes up. The bird that had given me intense stomach ulcers last year and the year before.
Yeah.
He fired off doing the same thing, but I think I got him figured out. The backyard bird. He's a cause of many sleepless nights, but he's
see,
back. He's back.
That's the fun part of turkey
hunting. He's back.
You know,
I kill all his friends, but he still remains.
You know, you on turkey hunting is so different than deer hunting or anything else. You know, you get on a bird and you don't kill him today, but you know he went over here to this bottom and then went on out that bottom and went over, and then you say, okay, now I know what he's doing. So I'm going to get on that other side over there. You know, you can't hardly sleep at night thinking about, okay, I know now what I'm going to do and I'm going to kill him.
Then what does he do?
He goes right where you were sitting the day before.
That is correct. So that's his bird. Yes, I got one of those. So I messed with him for just a little bit. I think that was it. And I got up, I did a midday sit, a place where I know hens dust. Didn't see any there. Slipped out. No, I got close to, that morning I did get real close to birds before all that other shit. When I started off Sunday morning, got close to two goblin birds, pretty hard goblin birds, but they pitched out. We have a pasture and they pitched down with them. Pasture and I can see them out there, but at that point I'm not gonna mess with them. I don't want to wait them out. I want to hunt them,
right?
At least at this point in the season. You talk to me in a couple of weeks, I may just wait them out, but at this point still. So I left them, did some farm work I had to do.
Okay, now
Monday morning. Yes,
tell me this, you did a big burn out there this year.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me, from last year to this year, do you think it's made a difference on your turkeys?
I don't think I have more turkeys. I mean, they're using it's very funny. A buddy of mine, a friend of ours in common, cursed me. He said, you know what you've done now? You've made those turkeys have even more places to go on this, you know, the spread.
The open spots. Yeah.
So they're definitely using the burn. Yeah. They're using the burn, but they're using the same. They use burn some. They use the other cover some, you know, which is good. And that idea in burning, we talked about in past shows, the way I do it is I try to make sure here's a burn and then right across from it, here's some good cover. It didn't get burned, so that hen can nest in that cover and then not far to take the poults over once that brood habitat with that, you know, a little more forbs that grow up. And so they can run around in there, have dirt under their feet, but still have overhead cover.
Yeah.
So that'll be right next to you. So they definitely are using it. It has spread them out.
Well, last year, some of those places you burned, there wasn't no turkeys.
No
in
turkeys go in.
None.
Thick. I mean, we got Kogan grass.
There was just no way it could go
correct.
In there.
Yeah, so, they go in there now.
Yeah, so I mean that's good.
There's a lot of sooty footed critters on our place right now. A lot of them have soot, you know, black on their feet. turkeys. Heck, the turkeys start. Yeah, I see turkeys using it on a camera, like while there's still smoke in the woods from fires that put
absolutely.
Out. So it's definitely. I mean, it's a management thing that I do, and it it works. But even I'm most excited about those burns, the ones I did this year. I'm most excited next year about those.
Yeah.
You know, that's when. But the so that was Sunday. So Monday morning, here's a cautionary tale. Stick with your gut. I'll entitle this chapter, Stick with Your Gut. So I'd heard those birds that I couldn't get on that went out to the pasture. I heard them Sunday morning, figured them out, came in the other way on Monday morning, first thing. So I took a day off of taking kids to school and went set up. So I did not know. I was so fired up to go that I got up. I woke up before my alarm clock at 4 something. I got to where I needed to be with like 20 minutes of darkness still.
Yeah.
Good thing I did. But I did it just because I got up early and I said, well, just get moving. I happened to put myself in amongst all of them. Somehow it's good and dark enough that I didn't bust any off a limb. And I sat down, let the birds gobble on their own. Didn't do anything.
Right.
And bird fires off. First bird fires off 80 yards from me. And then once he'd really fire off, another one started gobbling about 70 yards from me. And they're going nuts. Long story short, I made him get real fired up. And I had it going bonkers. Hens, I'll tell you what, here's a little tip. So I had hens in the trees pretty much above me. Gobblers were 70 to 80 yards away.
Right.
I had hens. I didn't realize as it got light at 10 to 15 yards or 20 yards from me. So when a hen would finally pick me out and fly off or putt and fly off, I'd cut real hard, fly down cackle over them. So they didn't hear that hen, and they'd go nuts. So it speeded up. Birds pitched down. It wasn't two. It was more than two. I didn't know that. There were two gobbling and others that didn't. And I was sitting where I had a small green field. I was sitting with my left hip towards one green field, and I have a bottom on the other side. And I'm pretty much aimed straight down. And the idea was, at first, I was actually kicked off to the left towards the green field. Like my knee would be at a 45-degree angle to the green field.
Right.
Because I said, they're going to pitch to this green field to strut. Right? They're going to pitch there and strut.
You would think.
And, okay. I had birds lose their mind off my right knee. Can't see them now. They're still, I got kind of thick stuff in front of me. I can see down the bottom. I can see down this patch. But right in front of me, I can't see. Sure sounds like they're going to come down the bottom and not the. I did the old put your hands down and kind of push up.
Yeah.
So you can spin. And I then took that 45-degree angle to the green field and did a 45-degree angle to the bottom.
Yep.
And that was the mistake.
They came to the green field.
Came to the green field. I had turning my head ever so slowly to wear the face mask because I, for some reason, I wore a full head face mask that day, not the 3/4 because it was bothering me, where the face mask starts coming over your one eye.
I see.
Yeah. That's how much I was having to turn to look.
Yeah.
There they were in the green field. I had one come past me at about 6-7 yards.
There, gobbler?
Yeah. And that it all came undone with him. I was thinking, I was trying to think my way through, I can probably swing on this bird. I could probably get it. Not that day. That was a covey rise.
Yeah.
But yes. So, yeah, if I'd stayed seated just like I was. This is what makes turkey hunting fun. It makes it frustrating, but it's what makes it fun.
It does.
If I'd have stayed, I mean, I made one, we've all done this who turkey hunt, I made one decision that undid me.
Yep.
Everything else was perfect. Mm-hmm. I came in the ink black. I didn't know it. I thought I was going to be 100 yards from these turkeys. I sat down amongst the hens, you know. I covered when the hens pitched out. I covered. They didn't spook the turkeys. They pitched down. But that last gobble or set of gobbles there made me think they're going to come off my right knee. I better get that angle versus the left.
Yeah.
And I was pinned down.
Yeah.
And so it goes. So that's what I got to report, Mike.
And then, you know, now you can't wait to go back.
Right.
Because you think you're going to figure them out this time. You're going to know what they're going to do, and they're going to fool you again, and then you won't be able to sleep the next night trying to figure out how you're going to get them the next day.
It was, to have them that close.
Yeah.
There's not anything hung up, they were in my dang lap, but, we'll have another shot at them coming up soon. But that's I could have put a blind up. I mean, believe me, I've gone through. I don't need to do this.
You didn't have a blind up.
I don't need to do this for the audience, but I will. I mean, riding in the truck, I analyzed, number one, that I kicked to the bottom instead of staying kicked towards looking at the patch. Number two, I could have put a blind up. Heck, I had 20 minutes of darkness. I could have put a blind up, but I wasn't sure that I was in the right place. That's I thought right. I might have to move. I might have to move.
Right.
When that bird gobbles at 80 yards, I'm not going to be unfolding the blind and making a bunch of movement.
Yeah.
So now I'm stuck.
Yeah.
I have no decoy to distract them. So it was all over when they pitched where if I'd have been sitting like I was supposed to be sitting, I'd have some hooks and a beard sitting there with yours. But I don't. And that's what makes a game fun. And
it does make it fun, John.
Coming right back to wrap it up here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. You got a good or a bad turkey story? I'd love to hear it. You can email us or hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you here. And let me do this, too. We'll be switching even more into gear for fishing because those people, unlike Mike and I, even though we're both fishing, bass fishing, but we'll talk some more other than bass. Look, and we'll talk about this big river we're having right now. As this starts to drop back out, we'll be talking to Captain Wayne Miller, too, talking about what happens up the river with that. I'm sure when this water gets back down the banks, it should be fine.
And when the weather's right, on a weekend, I'm going to miss a turkey trip. I'm going out in the Gulf. I'm going tuna and wahoo fishing.
Just getting good reports?
Yeah, oh, yeah, they're catching them. Yeah, it's good right now. Yep, time to go.
Right now. And that's the thing about wahoo. You and I have talked about it over the past. That's kind of a thing that as it gets into – not that you don't catch them in the summertime, but they go further out, it seems like.
They go further out. Right now, they're in close. They're in – some of them are in 80-foot, 100-foot.
That's close.
150, 200-foot, you know. Yeah, that's where they're at right now.
How are you going to drag live baits? You're going to drag artificials?
People right now that are catching them are pulling lures.
Okay.
Pulling giant crankbaits, basically, and catching them that way. But I like catching them on live bait.
Right.
I mean, that's just what I like to do. So if we can catch live bait, I do that. If not, I got lures.
Okay.
Either way.
Well, good.
I'm going to catch them one way or the other.
Tell you what else I'm going to do. I've got spring break coming with the kids. I have to go do a little trout fishing as well. Captain Bobby says, even with the rivers coming up like they did, which has really been nothing compared to what we saw the last couple of years, but still, you know, you got to 9.9, 10 feet at Barrie. He said south end of the bay, you go west of the Dolphin Island Bridge, still good. Those fish are still in the spring pattern, still in the shallow.
That's good, because we got a lot of muddy water coming down that river right now.
The nice thing is the way it goes out, you know, Mississippi Sound will get real muddy quickly on a west wind or something, where it just stirs up the water in the bottom. But it seems to not get the super freshwater load over it like the south end of the bay does. It seems to stay, and the further you go west down there, you get, you know, better and better water. But he said, this was talking to him on Thursday, on the fishing report, he thought things were holding up pretty good down there.
That's awesome.
Said the redfish, nothing's changed. They've been steady on the chew. But I'd be interested in that, and also when this water does come back down, you know, the bass fishing and getting – I mean, you and I are bass fishing, but we're bass fishing ponds. I'm talking about Captain Wayne Miller and what's going on in the rivers and in the delta.
Yep.
So that's all – I mean, it's – you know, it's that time of year where
Captain
you can
Wayne's,
do –
Captain Wayne's catching them right now somewhere.
Yep.
I promise you. The river's not going to hurt him.
Well, it's going to move him. But
it's going to hinder where he gets to go. But I promise you, he's going to be catching him somewhere.
You know what got me is I go through this lament every year, and that's white perch fishing. So before this, let's say 3 weeks ago or so, you know, we've had a dry winter.
We have.
Dr. Bill will tell you we're 7 inches behind or something, and the perch fishing had turned on up at the river.
Sure had.
The reason we got a flood is my buddy called me and said, we need to go. I'm murdering them. Let's go. And as soon as he said that, then here came the rain. But I'm waiting for the water to drop back out, too, to get, you know, at least a couple white perch trips.
Yeah, they've been killing the white perch. I mean, hammering them.
See, now you're singing my song. Obviously, in the fishing world, everything's wide. I mean, this is time of year to catch your biggest bass of the year, you know. By the way, you and I talked about Florida lakes and going down there fishing, spawning spawners in Florida.
Yeah.
So I had to had a business trip this week. Took me down into Florida, and even in the Panhandle area, where they got all those natural lakes, you know, where they have all the springs
and all that. Hurricane Lake and all those.
Oh, yeah, but there's like, you look, yeah, they're the big ones, but like the private ones that houses aren't, there's like, I was riding through an area, I was like, make sure you watch the road, Sean. Because I was just like, there's, look at that pond there. I bet you there's a big one in there. Look at that pond there. Look at that pond. I mean, it's just pond after pond after pond after pond after pond.
Yeah. That's the same reason that me and you don't run into deer a whole lot.
Right.
Because we're riding down the road.
We're looking for them.
We're looking at the road a little bit, but we're looking off to the side, seeing if we can see a buck on the side of the road somewhere.
I don't want to say this.
You know, so we see those deer before they come out to the road most of the time.
I don't want to say this because this is how, but may I knock on the wood here on this console? I've never hit one.
I haven't either. I have come really, really close.
I've come very close. I've had one leaping as it clears the truck.
Yeah. I had one jump in my trailer one time.
Excuse me? How much time we have left? We got a couple of minutes here before the break. Wait a second.
It's a really good story.
How do I not know this story?
I don't know. Maybe I just
jumped in your trailer.
I got a lot of stories I hadn't told you. Anyway, me and my brother's going down dirt road, and we look over, and here's two spikes running in a pasture across the fence right beside us, but they're running right down the road, right beside us. And we're just looking at them.
They're
you know?
Pacing y'all.
Yeah, just pacing us, and we're just watching them. All of a sudden, one of them turns and jumps straight at the truck, and my brother thought that the deer was going to come in his window, but it didn't. It jumped, and it landed in my trailer. And when it hit my trailer, I didn't have a buggy or anything in it. I don't know why.
It's an open trailer.
It's just my open trailer, but he hit it so hard that he knocked my tailgate down. And
from his impact in the trailer, knocks the tailgate of the truck down.
No, tailgate of the trailer.
Oh,
of the trailer. Knocked
what?
The tailgate of the trailer down, yes.
With pins in it? And
and knocked it down and left some blood there, but he got up and ran off. Sure did.
Into the trailer.
Into the trailer. Jumped into the trailer and busted my tailgate down. And he had blood in the trailer and on the tailgate, and then he ran off.
Well, I'll be darned. It'd been something if he had knocked himself clean out or killed himself, and then be laying in the trailer and didn't knock the back down. You just take him on
just
to the camp.
Just keep on going.
Take him on to the camp. Which, by the way, you can. By the way, we don't have time here, but we'll do it in a future show. And I've done it on the Midday Show, discussions of roadkill in Alabama and what you're allowed to keep and when you can keep it and when you need to call game warden when you don't on that for keeping it. But hey, I've been behind somebody who hit a deer that I went ahead and, you know, dead deer. They were worried about their truck and they're doing nothing. I went ahead and finished the deer and put it back in the truck,
Sean,
and it went to dinner.
Sean has eaten roadkill.
Absolutely. And will again. if somebody hits a deer right in front of me, a fresh deer,
yeah,
forget about it.
Well, like Philip, my nephew, he's riding down the road over Mississippi and a turkey flies out in front of him a few weeks ago before turkey season opens, and he whacks him. And it's a gobbler.
I don't believe that story.
Yeah. He's got feathers in the hood of the...
Well, you can do that. You
well,
can
I
go
guess
ahead and
so.
Construct
yeah,
a scene.
I guess so. But anyway, he comes back, you know, Philip, he comes back and takes pictures of him with a gun and a turkey and, you know...
Yes.
You know...
Poses up.
He's got everybody frustrated. It's for the season.
I think maybe I just leave my shotgun at home tomorrow and take the Toyota with me.
Just ride with Phil.
There you go. We'll do that. Hey, we'll do it all again next week. Appreciate y'all. Prep Sports Report on the way next.